Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and as always, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us for this week's show. If you'd like to get a hold of the program, you can do so in a couple of different ways. The first is sending an email to breakouthockey@radiostar.com. That's breakouthockey@radiostar.com. Or if you want to follow along with me, which by extension is following along with the show, on Twitter, you can certainly do so, twitter.com/Adam_Summers. That's @Adam_Summers. So, with that little bit of housekeeping out of the way, yes, it's been a few days. It's been a little while since I've been on the air, such as it were, for this program. I will not lie, after the way the first round concluded for a couple of the teams that I follow very closely, it was a little bit difficult to to do the program, but as always, the greatness of the game of hockey has drawn me back in, so definitely have some things to talk about here on the show. Before we get into, I do want to talk a little bit about the seasons that did just end last week for the Blackhawks and the Montreal Canadiens. But there is much to talk about in the second round of the National Hockey League playoffs. After a first round that was absolutely incredible in terms of rivalries, in terms of series going to Games 7, just crazy storylines, round 2 has been a little bit different. We've still seen a great deal of overtime games. Actually, as I was watching on Wednesday night as I record this, I was watching the Versus coverage where they had said that 14 out of the last 15 nights of the playoffs, at least one game had gone to overtime. So you cannot argue with the quality of hockey on a game-by-game basis, I don't think, at least in the second round. Certainly, in a lot of games, not the end-to-end wide-open hockey that we saw in many of the first-round series. But as of Wednesday night, the second round finds itself in a bit of a perilous state. It could actually be over. The second round could be over by this Saturday. It could be over really before, for several teams at least, before it got started. And I would be remiss if I did not get into in some detail the first team eliminated from the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, that being the Washington Capitals. I try not to go down the I told you so road too often on this show, but I believe I had mentioned it even before I had started doing this show. I had mentioned it on the show I do with Mike Sempervivi in previous years, but I said at the start of this season that the Washington Capitals will not win a Stanley Cup with Bruce Boudreau as the coach. And while I'm not going to lie, there were a few times throughout the regular season that my confidence in that statement was shaken a little bit. At least for this year, it certainly came to fruition as the Tampa Bay Lightning on Wednesday night completed the sweep of the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, that being the Washington Capitals. Defeated 4-0, as I mentioned, and not only defeated 4-0, but that is with home ice advantage. They were defeated in the first 2 games in Washington, then went back to Tampa for back-to-back games, which is a little bit odd. We saw that one of the only other times we've seen that throughout this year's playoffs was the games 6 and 7 in the Montreal-Boston series in round 1. Those were back-to-back games. But on Tuesday and Wednesday night, games 3 and 4 were played, and Tampa was victorious in both of those games to complete the sweep. Really, it was a series where no matter what Washington did, Tampa always had the answer, and usually had the answer pretty darn quick as far as whenever Washington got the lead. The few times they did throughout the series, Tampa would answer pretty quickly, not only to tie it up, but to then win the game, and thereby after Game 4 win the series. Tampa Bay, who I did, by the way, pick to win this series, I certainly didn't have it in 4 games. I believe I had it in 6. But Tampa Bay, I almost at this point have a real hard time picking against them, regardless of who they're going to play. They play that 1-3-1 system that is certainly frustrating to watch. I talked about on this show the game against the Blackhawks that I attended live here in Chicago at the United Center, which was just a maddening game, just an absolutely maddening game to watch in terms of the lack of aggressiveness on the part of the Tampa Bay Lightning. But it is an effective system, and particularly effective when the offensive stars that Tampa does have been going to the extent that they have been in the second round series. You look at what each guy did. Marty St. Louis, 5 points in 4 games. Vinny Lecavalier, 6 points in 4 games. Steve Stamkos, 2 goals in those 4 games. But even more so than the Stars, and their Stars did outplay the Washington Capitals superstars, that being Ovechkin, Backstrom, Semin, Green, guys of that ilk. The role players for Tampa Bay were incredible in this series, particularly Sean Bergenheim, who a lot of you will remember as a guy who had played several years for the Islanders, getting a chance to play some playoff hockey now, and Dominic Moore, who I have no problem admitting this. I'm a huge Dominic Moore fan. I find it amazing every year that he basically goes into a team, plays very well, and then does not get re-signed. That was the case last year for Dominic Moore in Montreal. He found his way to Tampa Bay, had a good season, and has just been absolutely spectacular for Tampa so far. Both of those players, in addition to Steve Downey, who, after getting suspended in the first round of the playoffs, has had a very, very good second round for Tampa as they now advance to the Eastern Conference. Kind of a quick aside on the whole Downey point, talking on him getting suspended in the first round. That, to me, has been one of the bigger surprises coming out of that first round, is that the second round has not seen anywhere near as many questionable hits, headshots. We've had several concussions or questionable concussions, but it just doesn't seem as though the number of hits, questionable hits per game, are at anywhere near as high a level as they were for the first round. So don't know if that's just coincidence. If I can't imagine that a 1-game suspension really did all that much to dissuade players, but regardless, hopefully the trend of lessening headshots continues throughout the rest of the playoffs. I will not hold my breath, though. Back to Tampa, though. It's hard to talk about this series without talking about Dwayne Rolison, the 41-year-old goaltender picked up this year by Tampa from the New York Islanders. He's made 123 saves on 133 shots, really not allowing particularly the Capitals' power play to get going to any great degree, and in a lot of ways, and I'm not saying they play the exact same style, and I know Tampa was a fifth seed, not the eighth seed, but the way Tampa is playing in terms of their ability to win games, their ability to come back and strike pretty quick whenever they get down, and their, obviously their goaltender and Dwayne Rolison, and their role players, in some ways Tampa reminds me of the 06 Edmonton Oilers, with Sean Bergenheim really playing the Fernando Pisani role, in terms of a role player coming out of nowhere to potentially be a legitimate Conn Smythe Trophy candidate if Tampa makes it all the way to the finals or even ends up winning the Stanley Cup. On the other end, Washington, you really have to wonder where they go from here, and that they spent the majority of this season trying to learn how to play under the sort of new defensive-minded, playoff-ready system that Bruce Boudreau brought to the team as the season went along. They spent the whole year preparing for that, really preparing for how they would handle playing a team like the that had a similar style to the way Montreal played last year when Montreal beat Washington in 7 games. And then they end up going against Tampa, who, while it's not structurally exactly the same, overall plays a somewhat similar style to Montreal last year, and they get swept. So, as I wrote about on Twitter right after the game, I think everything is open for questioning right now in Washington, or at least it should be, whether it be the status going forward of Bruce Boudreaux, whether, who knows, maybe it's even the status of general manager George McPhee going forward. However, I don't think Ted Leonsis will blow George McPhee out. I think that he may put pressure on McPhee to fire Bruce Boudreaux, which certainly McPhee is a very loyal guy, and I would imagine that would not be his first choice. But you have those sort of front office decisions, or decisions that have a bearing on the front office, I should say. But there are other things to consider as well. Should Alexander Ovechkin be the captain as Washington moves forward into the, you know, the next season? I am not a fan of making a guy a captain just because he's your best player or just because he's your top star. I think the jury's still out on whether Alex Ovechkin is a true Stanley Cup winning captain material. I lean towards that being no, but I would need to see him in that role with another head coach, and if he did not succeed again, then maybe it's time to look elsewhere for the leadership in that room. I think it may be time to look elsewhere for Alexander Semin in terms of what uniform, what jersey, what sweater he should be wearing. I thought he was absolutely dreadful, particularly in Game 4. Just his incessant bickering with the referees, including his complaining after a scoring chance that he was just barking at the ref the whole time going back, was very slow, very lazy on a line change, and that directly led to the breakaway for Marty St. Louis. That certainly pretty much put the dagger in the playoff heart of the Washington Capitals. So Alexander Semin has to answer some questions, I think, in terms of his consistency and really where his level of commitment is to the team. And just really, as a whole, the Capitals organization needs to question everything. The makeup of the team on the ice, the makeup of the front office, how those two aspects of the organization interface, because they are in danger of at least becoming the San Jose Sharks of the East. You can make the argument, at least with San Jose, though they've had some ups and downs, that they've, you know, there's been at least somewhat of an upward trajectory, in that last year they made the conference finals. Whereas certainly there is not, in terms of playoff performance right now, an upward trajectory over the last several years for the Washington Capitals. So we shall see what happens. Maybe by the time that that you listen to this show, some things will have happened in terms of the coaching situation in Washington. I guess we'll all find out together. Another series that I want to get into that, as I record this, is 3-0. Actually, a couple of series that are 3-0. Maybe these will be sweeps. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, we will be partially into another history will be made commercial with the teams in a 3-0 hole. But first, the Boston Bruins and Philadelphia Flyers. That series, going into it, really a tough series to call in some ways, because I don't think too many people would dispute the fact that Philadelphia, on paper, is the more talented team. However, Philadelphia has a few things going against them, most notably the injury to Chris Pronger, which has severely limited his ability to play at all in many games. In the few games that he has played in the playoffs, he certainly did not look like a top player by any means. Certainly did not look like himself. So they have that going against them. They have a few other injuries. Carter playing but injured. But the bigger issue, which not, I can't say it's altogether shocking, in the sense that this has been, you could argue this has been their problem since Ron Hextall, the lack of any number one goaltender. They really have not had a clear-cut number one for any long period of time in many, many years, and that's continued. I mean, you're going into the playoffs with Sergei Bobrovsky in the press box to start, you know, when he was your go-to goalie early in the season and was an early Calder Trophy favorite. He tailed off towards the end of the season, and I think any confidence that he had was shot by the way Peter Laviolette handles goaltenders. So basically, you're left with Brian Boucher and Michael Layton, both guys who have had their moments. Obviously, Michael Layton played in the Stanley Cup Finals last year, but they are far, far from proven number one goaltenders. And that's shown. Michael Layton, after spending the entire season with the Adirondack Phantoms of the AHL, got a chance to start some games and did not look good for the most part. He had his moments, but did not get the job done overall. And kind of a very odd story. He basically has gone AWOL over the last week or so. Did not show up for practice after a game, or I should say after he had a bad game. Before the next game, he did not show up for practice. It's a hard situation to figure out. We don't know if there's really, truly an injury there. He's pretty much been incommunicado with the media. Just reading between the lines of the way the Flyers organization is talking about Michael Layton, it'll be very interesting to see, even though he has 1 year left on his contract, very interesting to see what his future is with the organization. Then you have Brian Boucher, who has looked great at times, but he has found himself getting pulled several games, including several games in this series. He's had rough games where it was on him, other games where, much like this game on Wednesday night, game three, where the team did not start off well in front of him, but he did not make that big save to keep the team in the game, got pulled again on Wednesday night. So you look at a series that I think a lot of people thought may have actually ended up going seven games. Instead, it's a series that could end up only going four. Boston up 3-0 after the very close series with Montreal. They are hitting on all cylinders now. Zdeno Chara starting to play some of his best hockey. Tim Thomas, after a bit of an up-and-down first-round series, has been absolutely spectacular. So it's hard to see how Boston's going to lose this. You have the subtext, though. This is one of the great storylines of the second round, that Boston now has Philadelphia in the exact same scenario that they did last year in the playoffs, a 3-0 lead, and it is really, really going to be on the Philadelphia Flyers, or excuse me, on the Boston Bruins to buckle down. You would think that they are going to be highly, highly motivated to end this in four, because they don't want to give Philadelphia any life. Philadelphia wins one game, it is going to be, in terms of the Boston media, it's going to be all about deja vu all over again. If they somehow lose game five as well, and it gets to being 3-2, the pressure will just mount really exponentially as each game goes by. So it would behoove Boston, and this is quite the obvious statement, but it would greatly benefit them to end this series as soon as possible, that being in game four. Did want to mention here, as I look back to my Twitter account, my second round picks were the Lightning in seven, which that obviously didn't take quite that long, but the Lightning did win the series. I have the Flyers in six, which that certainly can't happen. The Sharks in seven, and the Predators in six. In terms of the Sharks in seven, it's looking like that's fairly unlikely as well, as the San Jose Sharks defeated Detroit in overtime on Wednesday night to make that a 3-0 series as well. Again, as you're listening to this, you may already know the fate of this series. The series may be going deep, but as I record this, in some ways a very close series. In some ways, it does remind me a little bit of the Chicago-San Jose series last year in the conference finals, where Chicago played very well, San Jose played very well. The margin of error was very slight, but it favored Chicago in each game, and it was a deceiving sweep. That was a very tough series for Chicago, but it goes down the record books as a sweep. I think the very same thing may be happening with San Jose and Detroit. The one thing that is notable is that Joe Thornton, I don't think there's any dispute that he is playing the best hockey of his playoff career. Coming up, obviously he had the big goal in round one to get San Jose by LA and get them into the second round. He had a great assist on Wednesday night on Devin Setoguchi's overtime game-winning goal. So Joe Thornton coming up big. They're getting great goaltending from Antti Niemi. Guys contributing, even Ben Ferriero, getting a overtime winner earlier on in the series. So things working very, very well for San Jose, whereas with Detroit, they're not too far off. But just missing that little bit to be able to get them over the top and really get back into the series. I will say, and it sounds strange to say this because Boston did blow the 3-0 lead last year, but I think that it's much more likely that Detroit wins a couple games and makes this a series than the same thing happening with the Flyers getting back in the series against Boston. I really don't see that happening, but as with everything else in life, time will tell. The other series, really the only series that is that we've seen anything other than either a sweep or a series being perched on the edge of a sweep is Nashville and Vancouver. A fascinating series in some ways. Some real mind games being played between the two teams. Some interesting officiating, particularly with the call that went against the Nashville Predators in Game 3 that led to the overtime winning goal for Vancouver, thereby giving them the 2-1 series lead as I record this. I get the impression that this one is going to go long. I had the Preds in 6. They would have to win 3 in a row to do that. I would be surprised if it goes less than 6 either way. Nashville, particularly in the first game, Pekka-Rinne was the only thing that kept them in that game. To me, they've played better as the series has gone on. As a team, they've gotten back to more of what you expect the Predators' style of hockey to be. Their big guns have been playing better. But it does all boil down to, for them, really, if they can score the first goal, and then if Pekka-Rinne can be, if he can be himself, he can be the Pekka-Rinne we've seen through the first 3 games of this series, rather than the inconsistent performances that we saw from Rinne in the first round against the Anaheim Ducks. So we shall see. It's been interesting because I think, to me at least, Vancouver not playing quite their best hockey. I think they in some ways are still, they're fighting a little bit of a post first round hangover, which is certainly not something we hear all that often. But with the emotional victory they had over, as much as it pains me to say it, the 7-game victory they had over the Chicago Blackhawks, that was, you know, all you had to do was watch the celebration. That was for them almost like winning the Stanley Cup. So now they go back, they play a team that isn't necessarily a big rival of theirs in Nashville, a team without any huge marquee superstars, at least to the casual sports fans. So a series they've had to work themselves into. So I think from their perspective, being up 2-1 after 3 games isn't a disaster. On the flip side for Nashville, if they can win, if they end up winning Game 4, if they have won Game 4 by the time you listen to this, that would be huge. And I think they would gladly take a 2-2 series tie after 4 games. I think if you had told them coming into this season that they'd be, you know, they'd make it to the second round, and after 4 games in the second round, they'd be tied 2-2 with the President's Trophy winning team, I think they would gladly take that and try their luck with that. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Nashville still has a good shot to come back and really do something in the series, but again, it likely will have hinged almost entirely on Game 4. So that's the second round. I'm sticking with my picks. I obviously can't change them, even though a few of them probably aren't working out too well. But hey, I picked the Lightning at least, and I don't know that a lot of people picked them, so I'll take that. Before we close out the show here, not going to go too long for the shows. We're about 25 minutes in already. Did want to talk a little bit about the very dark 24-hour period for me as a hockey fan, not just as a podcast radio host, as on successive nights last week, Tuesday and Wednesday night, in Games 7 in overtime, after each team had come back late to tie the game, both the Chicago Blackhawks and the Montreal Canadiens, as you well know, were eliminated. The Blackhawks-Vancouver Canucks series, what can be said about that series that has not already been said? Just the word epic gets thrown around pretty liberally in society these days, but that was in every possible way an epic series. The 2 blowouts by Chicago to really get themselves back in the series were were amazing from my perspective as a Blackhawks fan, but more just amazing in terms of the ghost that it brought up for the Vancouver Canucks psychologically. And I can say with pretty high certainty, having been there for Game 6, being in the United Center for Game 6, that was short of Game 5 last year against the Nashville Predators, the infamous Game 5 where the Blackhawks tied the game late while shorthanded and then came back and won the game in overtime after killing off the rest of a four-minute penalty. That Game 6 at the United Center was one of the most amazing live sporting experiences that of the many live sports events that I've been to throughout my life. That was right near the very top. The drama contained within that game, the 60 minutes in overtime, was absolutely incredible. Someday, and who knows, maybe not, particularly if the Blackhawks had come back and won Game 7. To me, you could have written a book. You could have written at least several chapters of a book about Game 6, maybe even a whole book. That game, from the electricity in the building after the Hawks having won Games 4 and 5 in blowout fashion, then when the crowd reaction to Corey Schneider being announced as a starter rather than Roberto Luongo, just the reaction as the game went along, Chicago chasing most of the game, the late penalty shot for Frolik. Frolik scores. Schneider gets hurt. Roberto Luongo, who wasn't even able to be on the bench throughout the game as the backup goaltender, gets called in, comes out, really isn't tested. Corey Crawford plays an incredible game, makes a number of spectacular saves throughout the third period in overtime. And then Ben Smith, of all people, a very good young player, but a guy certainly not on the radar of many people in Chicago, much less the national NHL fan base as a whole. Scores a great rebound goal to win it. Sets up a Game 7 that I think every Chicago Blackhawks fan, while being nervous about, felt pretty good about the Blackhawks' momentum going in. And then the Game 7, you have to give Vancouver credit. They played an incredible game. They were by far the better team throughout the vast majority of that contest. Corey Crawford was really the only reason that the game was even close, so the only reason they even had a chance to tie it. And the effort by Jonathan Toews to score what ended up being his first and only goal of the series, but that effort by Toews to score the shorthanded goal with less than 2 minutes left was everything you'd want out of a captain of the team that you follow. It was one of those plays that if somebody did not know who Jonathan Toews was and he wanted to show them, this is what Jonathan Toews is all about, that right there was probably the play that you would show them. Just an incredible move to even get the puck to the net, to be able to sweep the puck in while sliding across the ice. Just an incredible play. You go into overtime, get a power play, unable to convert. Patrick Sharp with the pass from Jonathan Toews to Patrick Sharp, the spot where Sharp scores on a regular basis on the power play. But move was telegraphed a little bit in terms of Toews having to elude a defender, take a few extra seconds to get the pass over to Sharp. Luongo was able to get set, made a great save, and then that afforded Vancouver the opportunity to capitalize on a egregious error, a turnover by Chris Campoli of the Blackhawks, and Alex Burrows puts the puck in the net, and just like that, the season's over. Being a fan of a team and seeing them lose in overtime and get eliminated, especially in a Game 7, that is jarring, as I'm sure many of you know. If you are a fan of a team that's gone through something like that, that is a jarring experience. You go from the absolute height of the season being full of life and vigor and energy, and then it's just over. The team isn't a team anymore. The season's done. So that sucked. As a fan, just stepping back from it, it was an amazing series. One of the greatest series, I think, in recent Stanley Cup playoff memory. But at the time, and certainly even a little bit now, still hard to objectively look at it that way. Then the next night, as a fan, I was sitting there thinking, well, hopefully at least Montreal can defeat Boston. keep my rooting interest alive as the playoff goes on. And that game as well, Montreal chasing. P.K. Subban scores just an absolute laser beam of a goal late to tie the game. Thinking everything's good, thinking Montreal's got all the momentum, and they lose in overtime as well. So that series was just another amazing series, and it's weird because you in one sense you can't help but look at it just on paper as a failure, in the sense that Montreal, they win two games, the first two games in Boston, and they're unable to win the series. But to me, the fact that Montreal even made the playoffs, the fact that they took Boston to seven games, considering the ridiculous number of injuries that they had to impact players. I mean, you have two of your absolute best defensemen getting injured very early in the season and being out for the year, that being Markov and Georges. You have the injury to Max Pacioretty, which had really taken away the person who, to that point, had become their hottest goal scorer over the previous month or 6 weeks or so. Max Pacioretty goes down, just a cavalcade of injuries after that. You have Scott Gomez having an absolutely horrendous season in terms of his production, and somehow through the much maligned system of Jacques Martin, which I was shocked to hear some people say that Jacques Martin should have been fired. I guess I shouldn't say shocked, it's the right word, I just disagreed in that. I think that it was the system and the buy-in, for the most part, that the team had into that system that allowed them to, along with the goaltending of Carey Price, obviously, that allowed them to still make it through and get into the playoffs and have a heck of a series with Boston. So, I mean, really, again, it's going to be interesting there. You've got Andre Markov coming up as a free agent. Hal Gill is not signed yet for next year. People are also forgetting that, yes, you have Carey Price still under contract, but only for one more year. A two-year deal is what he signed last offseason. So be interesting to see what happens in terms of if they try to get a they try to work out an extension early with Carey Price, as we've seen with several other superstar players over the last couple of years with other organizations. So the makeup of the Montreal Canadiens, particularly on the blue line, could be very different from what it looked like at the end of the season. James Wisniewski as well is a guy who is a free agent, and while he played very well for them, you wonder if there's room for him on the blue line, particularly if Markov and Gill are both brought back. So questions there, but on the whole, it's given everything that happened to Montreal, I find it hard to be overly disappointed with their season as a whole, even though it really hurt to see them go out in Game 7 in almost the exact same fashion that the Blackhawks did. It certainly, that was one of those things that, as a follower of the game, it tested my love of the NHL, regardless of whether my rooting interests are gone or not. And I'm happy to say I feel that I passed that test with flying colors, because I'm still greatly enjoying the National Hockey League playoffs. So with that, I think I'm going to leave all of you to be able to do the same. Enjoy the rest of the second round, however brief and fleeting it may be at this point. Looks to be a short second round, unless one of these series, unless really Nashville and Vancouver goes long, or somebody makes a miraculous comeback in the other two remaining series as I record this on Wednesday night. So thank you very much, as always, for joining us here on the Breakout Hockey program. Again, if you want to send an email to the show, breakouthockey@radiostar.com is the way to do that. You can also follow along on Twitter at @Adam_Summers. So thank you very much again for listening to this playoff edition of the Breakout Hockey program. Enjoy the hockey, whether it be the National Hockey League playoffs, the AHL playoffs, the Canadian Hockey League playoffs that are still going on in the Western Hockey League, the Ontario League, and the Q, or whether you're like me and getting great enjoyment out of the World Championships, the IIHF World Championships, even though Versus, for some reason, has shifted to tape-delaying games. over the last several days rather than showing them live in the early morning as I had been earlier on in the week. I guess I should be just happy the games are actually on in the States. But in any event, there is a heck of a lot of hockey to watch, so hope you're having fun watching it all. I know I am having fun watching it, talking about it, sadly not attending any more games, but hopefully you're getting a chance to go to games, and if you do, enjoy it, have fun, and as always, please keep it simple.